It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here on the RBN Network from Phoenix, Arizona. We have today, you know, first, go ahead, Drew. You know, we got, you know, they're getting hold of the guy in Germany, and we're going to do, but let me tell you what's going on. Here in the Valley, they have the cameras, okay? The camera fraud, they're supposed to come down. You know, so Drew, our videographer, goes in and just hit up two and just come on in. You all right? You know, what happened was they have a, I don't know, it's been a big dispute and battle going back and forth. And I just want to get a quick update. Are we going to have the surveillance cameras on the highways coming down? And that was supposed to be today.
No.
Well, what the heck were you doing? They keep announcing this. They're talking about it. They're going to bring them down. What was going on?
Camera's not coming. Well, okay, so the cameras on the freeways, the contract has expired. It expires today, and as they stated, at midnight tonight, the cameras will go dark, whatever that means, and the mobile units will no longer be deployed to the freeway. Well, they will not even be deployed today. There will be no, according to their press release, there will be no vans out on the freeways today, and at midnight tonight, the 76 cameras on the freeways here in the Phoenix area will go dark, whatever that means.
So they're not actually coming down.
Redflex, according to the contract that ends today, has 120 days to remove their equipment from the freeways. That puts us 4 months from now, November 15th.
Oh, so it's going to be after the election thing they flip them back on.
Correct. They can sign a new contract. They could sign. And now if they signed a new contract with ATS, which was sort of kind of halfway implied in one of the news reports a couple weeks back, they would have to take that equipment down and put up ATS stuff. So that you know, we'll see where that goes and who they decide to sign with. But if they did, in 4 months from now, or say November 6th, sometime after the election, let's say Terry Goddard wins. Terry Goddard might like the program. Terry Goddard might re-sign it with Redflex.
Yeah. Jen Brewer might do it.
And she might do it too. Well, she's supposed to. Well, so anyway, yeah. All they have to do is flip the switch. Well, there's a couple interesting things here with that. What if DPS took down all the signs today or tomorrow or this coming week? But the cameras stayed up. Are they going to turn them off? What does going dark mean? Does it mean that they're going to stop doing rolling video? Does it mean that they're going to stop issuing tickets? They can issue tickets. So that's what they're going to stop doing, is they're going to stop issuing tickets. But are they going to stop surveilling us on the freeways?
All right. See, this is what I, you know, it's big time military industrial empire complex of, okay? And thanks for giving us an update
on that.
Can I
tell
Drew?
You my frustration of driving out to Thunderbird and 17?
Oh, real quick. I got a guest in Germany on.
I drove all the way out there. Are we out of time? I drove all the way out there this morning to go get a sound bite from a DPS PIO officer, and they lied on their press release, and I couldn't get sound from anybody, and they love wasting my time. So thank you very much, DPS, for wasting my morning.
It says Drew. Well, let me tell you what we're doing. This kind of, you know, segues into what we're going to be talking about today. And we'll be right back with Professor William T. Hathaway. He is a former Special Forces, and he's in Germany. And he's got a new book out that's just, you know, how do you stop a war? You know, how do you stop? I mean, we're always at war with something, with somebody. You know, in my adult life, you know, I was born in 61. I'm 49. I can't remember we weren't killing somebody. And you wonder why nobody likes us and why we're broke. And they want to keep going more. Oh, how do you stop a war? I don't know. Well, hopefully Professor William Hathaway can tell us how. Because I would like to know. We're back with Professor Hathaway when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. And me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train. Come on the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller. Everyone jump on the peace train.
Oh, is there a peace train coming? Come on. You know, the pendulum has a swing the other way just because, I mean, dang. You know, I am of the opinion that we are in a situation to where peace is the only alternative to death. I'm serious. Man, it's getting bad. Bad. And unfortunately, one thing that I remember when I first started doing radio in February of 2003, we were building up into the Iraq War. The war drums were pounding in everybody's ears. And, you know, we were on the radio going, oh, that's what got my start. To have somebody, you know, there were sponsors that have somebody on the air, a good hardcore, no compromise libertarian given the rational and principled argument against a war. Because we knew what was going to happen. And there were going to be Marines standing on a pile of rubble in Baghdad holding American flags saying we win. And then the war would start. And it's these wars are not meant to be won. They're meant to be fought. That is what we're up against. Professor Hathaway, I have you there, sir.
Yes, indeed. What an eloquent statement.
You summed it up,
Ernest.
And it's really, yeah, you had to write a whole book, and I just need a bumper sticker. So, you know, tell us about your book. What's the message you're trying to share with everybody?
Well, it's a permanent war. You're so right. And we've been trying to end it with the traditional methods of demonstrations and petitions and trying to build public opposition to the war in hopes that would pressure our politicians into ending it. And that worked. The first part, the building of opposition, was a success. The great majority of Americans went out of that war.
Well, before we even went in, I remember there were more people in the streets in the first half of 2003 than there were during the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
All over the world. They knew what was coming. Yeah. We know what you're going to do. Stop. What is it that we're up against that can bulldoze over the open and obvious advocacy of the people not to go around killing everybody? You know, what is it we're up against?
That advocacy in 2006 voted Republicans out of control of Congress and voted the Democrats in because the Democrats promised to stop the war.
Well, you didn't believe, did you?
Those same Democrats voted this huge increase in military spending and they supported the troop surges.
When they did that, when Pelosi and them took office and they voted to fund it immediately, first chance they got, they voted to fund it. We did signs here. You know, we do a bunch of signs. We're the ones that started the Ron Paul Revolution. We're the ones that came up with that logo and did all these signs. So we had a bunch of signs. And one of them was, it said, pin the war on the donkey, and it's the Democrats' war now.
Pin the war on the donkey. Wonderful.
So this understood. People, they love that sign. They're like, yep, that, you know, that's what it is. It is not a Republican versus Democrat thing. It's a them versus us thing. And I need to know who them is. I mean, in your research and such, I mean, I see a lot of numbers here, just enormous amounts of dollars that are involved here. But who are we up against?
Well, you're too young for this, but there was a great cartoon strip called Pogo. And in Pogo, he says, I've met the enemy, and it is us. I mean, we're all tied into this thing, too, in terms of our consciousness and in terms of our approach to the world. We all have some degree, especially in this culture, of violence in us. I mean, in states in the United States, they still execute people. And children grow up, you know, reading about this, that it's okay to kill people. And that kind of brutality, this kind of hyper-competitive, aggressive system is within us, and that is difficult to dismantle. Barack Obama said he could, you know, he promised with his wonderful charisma, he was a much better salesman than Pelosi was, and he convinced us that, yeah, he could do it. He could bring peace. And instead, he sent even more soldiers and expanded the airstrikes into Pakistan and
Well, here you got to understand, Professor, you know, there are people been around the block a little bit. You know, I've been an activist since 88. You know, I'm a libertarian, man. You're not selling it to me. I already know where this goes, okay? So, when Obama was coming on scene, oh, we're going to this and we're going to that, and knowing the people around him and knowing the endorsements that he was getting and seeking and the words that he was saying and how was he, we knew exactly what was going to happen in 06 with the Democrats coming in. We knew exactly what was going to happen in 08. We know exactly it's going to keep continuing. And yeah. Even though they will spend trillions of dollars to try and brainwash and mind meld us into this war-supporting, war-drum-beaten culture, they have to, one, spend trillions of dollars to even have an attempt, and two, even after they do that, the majority of people are still against killing people, yet they keep doing it. So I need to know, Professor, I'm like, you know, let me tell you what the question, what I'm looking for. I get it. I know they're spending gazillions of dollars and doing and raping, pillaging, murder, and all this kind of stuff, and it's a real simple reason why. One, because they can, okay? It's no more complicated than that. Because they can, because we have created a structure, a government, a delegation of authority to people that go, oh, okay, so all I got to do is get these positions of power and I get to do what I want and screw you. Oh, well, I can do that. Okay, and they do. So I'm going, you know, so if I had the choice between, you know, a government or none, I vote none. Oh, you're an anarchist. You're an anarchist. I go, compared to what? Compared to what we got now? I vote anarchy. None. I'm all for none. So until somebody can tell me who it is that I am against, I say government. You give me a better answer. It's government. In general, government. Anarchist, government. So if you can't tell me who it is, I blame the government. Who am I up against? Is it government or somebody else? Tell me.
Well, what the government's response to that is that war is not us. War is just human nature. People are just like this. And we're bombarded with propaganda convinces of that.
I don't believe it.
They have some evidence of... And you can point to history. I mean, there have been a lot of wars, but it turns out if you look closer at history, that's the history of our patriarchal civilization. There are other civilizations, like the early matriarchal civilization in southeastern Europe, enjoyed centuries of peace. And in many of the Pacific islands, this war was unknown.
You know,
in the ancient Vedic civilization in India, they had meditation techniques that preserved the peace, and we can use those today. The war isn't inevitable. Our human genes don't force us to make war on each other.
No, what I believe and what I have witnessed and what I have seen is a, you know, that's why they call it revolution. It just keeps coming around. And what are we always, revolting against? You know, it has always been the collectivization of power that attracts the worst sorts of humanity. Not the majority. Uh-huh. Doesn't need to be the majority. Heck, you only need, a few thousand people, you can run the planet. You know, so I'm just going, it's just having this collection of power, and they want the people on the left and the people on the right. They're always screaming about who's going to be in power, who's going to wear the ring of power, who gets behind the lever of power, and it's just to do what? Oh, we'll do the right thing. I'm Obama. I promise this, socialist utopia, de la whatever the heck it is, and then you get the fascist guy on the other side. But let me tell you one thing that they never, ever challenge is the fact that they're going to rule you. Regardless of how they're going to rule you, you will be ruled. And I'm going, you know what? Can I vote no ruling? You know, how about that? Because you can't have these wars without the ability to collect treasure resources and then, oh, by the way, your sons and daughters belong to the king. We're going to send them over in some sand heap somewhere to go kill and die. And I'm going, somebody's got to, you got to help me out here. I'm telling you, man, I'm big anti-government, getting more and more every single day. And I have you on. You have a lot of information on here. How do we stop a war? So I'm asking you, how do you stop it and still keep these governments?
Let's convince people that it can be stopped, and do away with the propaganda that they have that say we're just killer apes. You know, there's enormous studies that enormous publicity about this killer ape theory that the chimpanzees, our closest relatives, make war. That means we're genetically programmed to kill each other. And they got, so they said war is inevitable. It's hardwired into human nature. But what they didn't publicize, what later came out, that the chimps who invaded their neighbors and were involved in killing their neighbors were suffering from shrinking territory and food sources, that they were struggling for survival, and chimpanzee groups with adequate resources didn't raid other colonies. So that aggression isn't a behavioral constant. It doesn't happen all the time. It's just caused by the stress that they were under. So their genes gave them the capacity for violence, but the stress factor has to be there to trigger it into combat. And so the new research shows that war is not inevitable, but it's just a function of the stress that society is under. And our biology doesn't force us to make war. It gives us the potential for it.
I tell you what.
Without the stress to provoke it, it just could be an unexpressed capacity.
When we come back, we're going to talk about where the stress has come from. And I say,
yeah.
I say from Fox News, you know, or the government. And it's so hard for me to tell the difference between the two. Oh, more with Professor Hathaway when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. How do you stop a war? We'll find out.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Stepping to the man of war. You know, No. I'm for what? I can't be for something and you know, like, how about we try some peace? You know, truth, justice. You know, what used to be the American way. Here we have on the show with us William Hathaway. He's a former Special Forces soldier turned peace activist and author. And he's right now he's an adjunct professor of American Studies at the University of Oldenburg in Germany. So tell me the perspective that you're getting from the people you associate with and your students and so on in Germany. What do they think of the United States and our war mongering?
They just really hate it. They hate it so intensely, and yet they're in the same helpless position that we are, because their government is determined to go ahead with it too. And they've got troops there, and right now as we speak, there are German airplane, Luftwaffe airplanes, flying over Afghanistan, taking pictures. And it's night in Afghanistan now, but they have these infrared sensors that show where the Taliban might be having campfires, you know. And then they bomb. Then they take those pictures and give them to the U.S. Air Force, and the U.S. Air Force bombs them. So the Germans know that their people, that their tax money is involved in killing Afghans daily. And now these terror attacks are starting here too, to revenge, because it's revenge is a deep need in that culture when you've been wrong, when you're. Someone in your family has been killed, you need to take revenge. So it's no wonder that they're trying, you know, to set off bombs here.
Well, but, is that a desired result? I mean, it seems to me it's like, you know, that's what the people that are going around bombing, raping, pillaging, and murdering, and Abu Ghraibing, and torturing, and waterboarding, and all that. It's like, you know, I can imagine them sitting back and going, heck, what do we have to do to get these guys to come do terrorist attacks against us so we can,
yeah.
You know, get more Big Brother?
Yeah. Well, in my book, I interviewed a young woman from Iraq whose family was brutalized by U.S. soldiers. And the experience turned her into a pacifist and her brother into a resistance fighter. And she feels that actually the U.S. government wants the terrorism because it gives them the excuse they need to run this war, to dominate that area, to control the petroleum supplies, to control the pipeline routes.
We had on
they need the terrorism.
Absolutely,
to justify
we
it.
Had on our site on Freedom's Phoenix just this week sometime. Obama administration saying that, you know, for his presidency to survive, you know, we need a terrorist attack. And I'm like, well, at least
they'll generate one.
Yeah, at least they're open.
That could be
it.
Arranged.
You know, and you know, probably often has been. You know, I'm looking at. I tell you where I see hope in a lot of different ways. But one of the things that I thought was very interesting, and I was very glad to see, was after the 2004 presidential election cycle when you had Bush, Kerry, and that puppet show going on, and afterwards you had all these people that it was a site said we're sorry or something, and it had all these people from America just putting up JPEGs, just photos, graphics of them holding a sign saying, you know, we're sorry, we tried. And then there was tens of thousands of those that just, it was a big web page, all these people telling the world, look, man, we're not supportive of this. And then there was a return from around the world that was a website that we forgive you. You know, we don't blame you. So I'm going, it's not the people doing this. Who is? I ask for the 15th million time.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's the government so much as the forces behind the government.
There's a difference?
Well, the corporations aren't the government. The corporations use the government to implement their policies, it seems to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that's what happens. You got a government. Oh, let me see. Here's a dial I turn. I put a little money in here, and I turn this dial, and the vending machine gives me what I want out here. Well, guess what? You know, who owns the vending machine? Who gets what the person putting the money in? That's who, you know. Well, where do they take it from? They take it from me without my – I'm like the electricity outlet, and they just force you on the grid to keep, you know, powering this machine that the Goldman Sachs and Wack and HUD and Halliburton and KBR and – Boeing and, you know, the whole military industrial New World Order empire complex of, you know, gets to go up and push the buttons and get whatever soft drink they want. And I'm going, you know, I want to unplug. I stop feeding the beast that's devouring me. Stop. So I'm going, you want to stop the war. You want to stop all the, get us off of supporting the machine that does it.
Exactly. But the very transfer of that money from the people into the military also serves to feed the military, because it's made the people so poor that so many of the young people, the only way they can get a college education is to join the military and kill people just to get an education, and that's monstrous.
You know what a sheepskin gets you now? A debt. That's what it does. You know, we'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, William Hathaway, former Special Forces. We'll ask him a little bit about that when we come back and visit with him from Germany. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's take a peek. You know, it's just whoa. You know, stop, stand up on a little hill a little bit, put their heads up, do the meerkat thing, going, yeah, what up on the savannah here? Well, I tell you what up. You know, there are people just, you know, ripping you off in the name of fear. They cannot justify getting you to support whatever unless they can make you more afraid of something else other than what it is that they're doing right now. And you know what? It's getting almost impossible for me to be more afraid of any, you know, alien invasion from Space Alpha Centauri Predator or whatever, you know, than what I got to deal with right here in front of my face every day from my own government. I give you an example, Professor. This is a good one. On Freedom's Phoenix today, freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. On freedomsphoenix.com, we have a story. Britain bars Iroquois lacrosse team in passport dispute. A Native American team forfeited their opening match of the Men's Lacrosse World Championship on Thursday after being denied entry to Britain on tribal passports. The Federation of International Lacrosse said in a statement that the 23 Iroquois players had been told they needed U.S. or Canadian documents to attend the two-week tournament in Manchester. Now, this is my point. Lacrosse is a Native American sport, okay? They go to Britain. They go, hey, are we a sovereign nation or not? Well, what do you got Britain doing? Oh, we're playing the game. You know what? You got to pick, man. Canadian or U.S., you's on the grid. We need you to – you got to be in there. You got to have some electricity funding the vending machine for the war. You know, I'm just going, this stuff cannot stand. And from your perspective, Professor, I mean, special forces for who and what and when?
Well, being the special forces really convinced me that you can't bring peace by waging war. It just doesn't work that way. And during the Vietnam War, there was this huge propaganda campaign to convince us these Viet Cong, these communists over there, they're just terrible people. They'll do all these awful things, all these atrocity stories. And now there's the same thing about the Muslims. The Taliban, Al-Qaeda, they're trying to destroy us. They want to conquer America, force us all to become Muslims. They're portrayed as these insane mad dog killers that we need to exterminate. What you said, this fear machine is so powerful. The best way to refute this fear is to read the actual demands of Al-Qaeda. They're never publicized in the West. No one knows what they are, but if you really look for them, you can find them. Basically, they come down to just go home and leave us alone.
Yeah, you know, thou shalt leave me alone.
Pull your soldiers out of our area. Pull your CIA agents, your missionaries, your corporations, your vulgar entertainment that you force on us. Get rid of it. Pull us out. If you do that, we'll stop attacking you. But there's nothing about destroying the West or forcing to become Islamic, just that the West should stay in the West and keep not trying to dominate these countries economically and politically and culturally. Just let them have their culture.
Well, what is
and
the culture?
These are brutal people. The Al-Qaeda and Taliban are brutal people, but we turn them into that. We manufacture these people so they could kill communists in Afghanistan.
Oh, heck, a lot of times not only do you fund them, we give them their name. I mean, you know, here, let me tell you what you're going to call you. You're whatever, okay? So how does this manifest itself on the ground in Europe? You're in Germany, and of course, you know, there's going to be the Muslim demonstrations. I mean, we've experienced it here, certainly in the Southwest, with the Hispanic immigrants. You know, we got the illegal immigrants saying they come out by the hundreds of thousands, and we don't want to be brutalized or shipped or whatever. And, you know, and I can see, and I... You know, a lot of my friends and the people I associate, we just don't see it as a threat. I mean, our generation is just, they're trying to make it, and aren't you feared? Look, they're holding a Mexican flag. And I'm just going, you know, am I allowed not to care? I just don't really, you know, it's only government always complains about more customers. And I'm going, if you stop having a welfare state, then what's the problem? You know, but besides, they're leaving all now anyway because the economy sucks. But, you know, I'm looking in Europe and you have kind of the same thing. If you're in New Zealand, it's the Chinese that they want to have immigration controls on. If you're in, I don't know, wherever else, you know, I guess in Europe, you know, there's this Muslim thing, you know, so tell me, are there Muslims in Germany having rallies, wearing, you know, turbans and long beards, holding signs that somebody paid them to hold, or are they really animated on their own? Are they, you know, death to the West? I mean, what is it that they show on television in Germany to get the people behind this?
There are a few of them, whose family members or just who, out of revenge, are over here and trying to set bombs. They haven't succeeded yet, but there have been some attempts. And those attempts get enormous publicity. But what they're also here a lot, and the reason I'm here, one of the reasons is that there's a lot of American soldiers here. And I basically left the U.S. because I was getting involved in sort of peace activities that I knew would get me put in prison in the U.S. But I could get away with it better here. And what we do here is we help U.S. soldiers to desert. We help talking about the poverty thing of needing to get an education. So many of the soldiers who desert, they just join for the little bit of college tuition. And the military doesn't give you much tuition, but it's a little bit. And they join for that and found themselves in a hell. One guy was very badly wounded in Afghanistan and sent back here for treatment. In the military hospital here in Germany, And then when they said, okay, you're good enough now, we'll give you, we'll send you to Iraq. And now you go to Iraq. At that point, he panicked and went AWOL and met one of the people in our group here, a Catholic peace worker in Pax Christi. But then she was trying to help him to desert. But then he got arrested. He got arrested for AWOL, and we had to actually break him out of the military detention he was in, and then get him to desert. We got him into Sweden.
You're breaking people out of military incarceration? Is that what you're
doing?
That would get you arrested in the United States and probably anywhere else on the planet. So
it was a little easier than that. His job, he was in. They didn't know he was going to desert. He was just in regular detention for AWOL, and their job was to pick up trash along the edge of the base.
Mm.
He was outside. They were outside defensive base, and all we had to do, he let us know, and we drove by in a car with a hatchback, slowed down. He jumped in the car, and we took off and got on the Autobahn, roared a few exits away, and there was a van at a rest stop waiting there, and we got him in the van, and they sent him to Sweden.
Well, so, this is, I mean, you're offering this to...
This is the book. This is the... That's the first chapter in the book about this story.
Well, so, tell me what it is that you... Is there a larger effort there to help anyone that wants to just be dumb? It's like here in the United States, we're going to Canada. What's happening in Europe? U.S. soldiers now going to Sweden. And what does Sweden have to say about this?
Sweden has traditionally been willing to accept them. And we got another woman who was raped in Iraq and sent back to Germany, and just couldn't do it, and kept getting into trouble here because she just could not fit in the military after being she was raped, and then the military just shut it up. They wouldn't really investigate it. They just said, "Don't make trouble, or you will be in trouble. Things will get worse." She had a nervous breakdown. They sent her back to Germany, and she kept getting in trouble here because she just couldn't salute and don't do all that stuff anymore. And we got her into the Netherlands. The Netherlands will accept people, sort of, they won't officially accept them, but the individual people in the agencies giving these visas will do it. We've also got a person into, a Spanish-speaking soldier into Venezuela. Venezuela will take some people. They're not afraid to defy the U.S. because they know what it's like to be attacked by the U.S., because the U.S. is waging another kind of war against Venezuela now, against the government there, and against their attempts to change their system.
Well, tell me how many people are doing it. I mean, we get a lot of numbers that, you know, scary numbers about how many suicides there are. Scary numbers about, you know, people that just, you know, their third, fourth, fifth, sixth tour going back. And I'm just going, you can't come out of this and infantry combat, high stress doing, I mean, you had been deployed to Vietnam in Special Forces. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I came to realize that the real war heroes, I got medals for combat there, and I came back and met the people who deserted, and I realized, hey, they're the heroes, not me. They had the moral courage and the insight to say, I'm not going to do it, even though it means I'm going to jail, even though it means my life might be smashed, might have to become a fugitive. I'm not going to go over there and kill people. And that is heroism.
When you have a...
That's why I wrote the book, was to sort of to bring those people to the fore and give them a chance to tell their story.
What if you had a war and nobody came? Well, you know, that's a cultural thing, you know, but I'm like, if you're going to have these governments, you're always going to have these wars. It's just part of the machine. Because everybody's so worried about the ship of state. We have to take care of the ship of state. No matter how big the iceberg gash is, you know, we're trying to patch it, and nobody cares about the people. You know, at least you're there trying to save some of the passengers. I mean, let's get off the ship. Let it go down beneath the waves. I don't care. I'd just soon not replace it, okay? I let it go. But the thing is that it's always a promise. us, that the ship is there to save the people, to serve the people, to whatever, and then it becomes a prison, and then it becomes a death machine, and that I can see what's happening, but I'm looking at what you're doing. What kind of overall effect do you think you're having? I mean, is it infectious? Do they know you exist? Are you doing it one at a time? You're kind of clandestine. Are you out in the open with it? Is it a movement that must be crushed by all means necessary? Or am I getting a visit by the guys, the men in black with the dark sunglasses and the curly thing in their ears as soon as I get off with you wanting your phone number? I mean, you know, how open are you about this?
Well, now we've gone open with it. That's what the book does. The book was going open with these activities we've been doing over here for quite a while now. And we decided now is the time to go public, but with me as the only real name person involved in this. And the price I pay for that, since they said, well, you're in the Special Forces, you're used to being under attack, and I'm out. Since they don't live in the U.S., the German government wouldn't extradite me.
Really?
But the main thing is that their public protest here would be too strong if they did that. They have to be very careful because the peace movement, the Germans learned firsthand the destruction of war. America really hasn't learned that yet, and I hope they don't.
Well, you could. It's a rendition thing, man. They're going, you know what, William? You know, it's not prudent at this juncture allow you keep being out there, and all of a sudden, you know, where'd William go? I don't know who's here a minute ago. So, you know what I mean?
I don't think I'm that big a threat to this. But the main thing is that I don't do this stuff anymore. I had to break all contact with the group. In other words, there's no contact between me and the group anymore, and I'm not involved with it anymore. And an attorney told us that my just writing about my past activities is not enough to get me convicted. That's not really evidence to get me convicted. So it's a touchy thing, because now that I'm in contact with the group, I expect probably my emails and phone could be tapped at some point. The book is just out. Radical Peace, People Refusing War is just out. When it gets some government attention, they may tap my phones and read my emails, but since I'm not in contact with the group, they can't go from me to the group. And I don't think I'm big enough threat to them, they're going to try to knock me out here. Because that would be a real bad public relations faux pas now that the book is out, if I suddenly ended up dead. They're not monsters. They're not monsters. They're just desperate people. They're just desperate people.
Well, I'm wondering who you're talking about. I mean, you're talking, who's desperate? The individuals or the government or the military? I'm going, I don't know, they're pretty monstrous to me, man.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I think at some point I still believe to a certain degree that they're trying to do it, and they would just not kill somebody just for that.
Where you been, man?
Well, maybe we'll find out, Ernest.
Well, at least we got you on the archive now. You're an optimistic individual. And, you know, and I've done the same kind of stuff for 22 years. And a lot of people, they'll go, how in the heck are you still breathing? Because they don't really see me as a threat. Because, like you, we don't advocate replacing them on their throne. We don't advocate going in with guns blazing. We don't advocate, we want our turn at the ring and we're going to smite you and we're in charge now. And so on. We just want to get away. We just want to be left alone. We just want to, you know, not be in your thing. So there are people out there that are a direct threat, and they focus their attention on that. Oftentimes, they need to even create them so they can justify them going after people to go and have the capacity to go after anybody that would genuinely threaten their physical person or their existence on the throne. But they don't. But let me finish this one thought. They don't see what you're doing as a threat when, in my opinion, this advocacy for peace, this change in culture, this change in focus and priorities of the evolution of humanity, that is the real threat, and they don't see it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Beautiful, man. The fact that we're changing people's consciousnesses is the threat. And the fact that we're trying to build peace that way,
Well, you know, what else is the threat? You know, it's
well, some of the guys in my book, they're doing things that are a legitimate material threat. I've got one guy in the book who goes around and he has got a camper and a dirt bike, and he goes around and scouts out places where the National Guard and the Army's left out trucks or jeeps, and he burns them.
We got to save that. That's a good one to come back on. Oh, and I thought you were a peaceful guy. You know, we're going to be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Solution for you right here, along with Professor William Hathaway. It's non-war. What do they call that? Peace? I don't know, man. That's been a while. Well, I don't want to leave without, you know, getting back to what you were finishing up on. You got guys out there, you know, they're being monkey wrenchers, man. You know, is there an actual effort by people to? See, I don't really, I still see that kind of activity as, it just feeds into the, I mean, sooner or later, I think there's going to be active resistance, but it's, I don't advocate for it, I just see it coming, because I'm just, can we just back off? I just, you know, let them die on their own, you cut the root of money and support and all this media hype and everything, it's just, we just educate ourselves out of this. I don't know what else to do other than to advocate for, you know, just knowing the truth with books like yours and having you come on the radio. I mean, what else am I supposed to do?
You're a peaceful man, Ernest. That's rare. Because it's hard to avoid that kind of wanting to strike back against you know, to be violent against the violence.
No, that is striking back. You know, I'm an intelligent enough guy. I've been doing this a long time. And let me tell you what I know the big bad guys want. They want you to be big bad so they can be, bigger, badder. And I'm going, you know what? You know, I'm doing the Gandhi thing, not because Gandhi saw, you know, passive resistance as a goal in and of itself. It was a technique. It was a tactic. He knew what it did when you can show them for the brutality that they espouse. They're bad people. Good people don't support bad people. The only way we support bad people is when they're able to convince us that the other guy's worse. You know what I'm going? I don't know. He'd have to be pretty freaking bad, man. Because I mean, you guys really take the cake. What is your ultimate goal with this book? You're trying to accomplish what?
My ultimate goal with it was, I was laying out these other plans that are more aggressive, attacking it. But then, what I ended up with in Radical Peace was research that shows that using these ancient Vedic techniques that they use then. To keep the peace in India during the Vedic civilization, we can use those now, and the results are quite astounding. It turns out that when 7,000 or 8,000 people are meditating together, that violence decreases globally, that attacks go down, the terrorist attacks go down, the level of conflicts in wars, and also the level of, you know, car accidents go down. It works from the level of collective consciousness, that when a large enough group of people are meditating, it works on that level where all our minds are connected.
You know, I want
a wave of positive peace that affects the minds of everybody else in the world, really. And it's quite astounding. And there's a lot of good research for it. And if people are interested, it's too technical to go into now, but the website permanentpeace.org has incredible research that's from, like, the best academic journals, peer-reviewed studies, that show that there's really quite possibly a way to bring peace through large numbers of people meditating together and purging the collective consciousness of the stress that's built up in it.
Now, I understand, and I had some experience with this. I remember politically in 1992 when Perot was getting all the attention and so on, there was the Natural Law Party here.
John Hagelin.
And it was 1992, the Natural Law Party got 50 state ballot status with him running as president, and they did exactly exactly that. Went to Washington, D.C., and said, look, man, it's always about the positive waves. We're going to be, and, you know, I, can you stay another segment?
I can do it. Yeah.
Why don't we go ahead and do that? Because I want to finish up on this thought. I've had experience with this and how it impacted presidential politics. I'll share that with you when we come back.